Welcome to Emil Franzing's Voices of the West, dedicated to the principle that America was better off when our TV shows featured cowboys instead of lawyers.
Of course.
Amen.
It's always been better. Welcome to another edition of Emil Franzing's Voices of the West. I'm Harry Alexander, Bunker de France across the way.
Yep.
Way over down the road a piece in Los Angeles, our good friend Todd Roberts. Howdy.
Howdy. Please don't try to hold that against me.
Okay.
We tolerate prunings because somebody has to.
Yeah, somebody has to. And today we have a great program for you.
Awesome program.
We think anyway. Cindy Mitchum Asbill is going to join us here shortly and talking about the, I guess it's the reissue of them Ornery Mitchum Boys book. So we're excited about that. We're always happy to have Cindy on with the show. Great friend of the show anyway. But you've got some bunker stuff there, do you?
Well, coming to you from Bunker's Bunkhouse, I'm going to bring you another edition of The Good, the Bad, and the Bovane. Bovine.
Bovine.
It's in vain.
That's but, like William Devane or yeah, William Devine.
I'm going to explain this because Cindy's probably hadn't experienced this. Yeah. And this like is the, something no, different.
Too much bovine creates pain.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And methane.
But what I'm just telling you now. I wanted to warn you, Bunker, because I know how you get.
Okay, I'm going to explain this to you, Cindy, so you understand what's going on. What I do is I kind of take a trip through time, and I start with today being the, 18th?
Yes, it's the 18th.
And I go back 3 days in time, and I go forward 3 days in time. But I don't go into the future, I go into the past going into the future.
And he gets really lost.
Yes, I do. And anyhow, I'm going to start out with April 15, 1715. The Pocotaligo Massacre triggers the start of the Yamasee War between British settlers and the Yamasee Indians in the province of Carolina.
Oh.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
And then, on April 16, 1524, let's go a little bit further back, Giovanni di Verrazzano, that sounds familiar to you New Yorkers, he was the first European to discover New York Harbor. He was an explorer and a navigator who played a very significant part in early exploration of the North American continent. He explored the Atlantic coastline from Florida all the way up to Newfoundland and said that this harbor in New York's got a great possibility.
You know, we never hear about those things I don't remember learning about that in history.
That's why I'm here.
Well, I know that, but the point being, they should have been teaching that stuff in history.
Yeah, they should have.
Yeah.
Well, you know, see,
there's a lot of stuff they should have been teaching.
Well, thank you.
And you know, this is my.
I thought you were there. I thought you were here to bring the turkey.
I am.
I'm still waiting.
I'm here to bring the turkey.
No, but, jerky.
Oh, the jerky. Jerky. But, see, I enjoy doing this part so much because I love doing research, and I love the obscure part of our history that all the dunderheads out there don't even care about. Now, for another edition for the dunderheads, April 17, 1918. See, we moved into the 20th century.
Wow.
Bill Holden, William Holden, was born. He's an Oscar and Emmy Award winner. He was a first lieutenant in the United States Air Force in World War II. And I respect our veteran actors because those were the best actors coming out of World War II. Anyhow, I'm going to run down a quick rundown of some of his Western movies because I think he probably has one of the best batting averages of really good Westerns.
Mm-hmm.
It started with Arizona in 1940, mm-hmm. Texas in 1941, and I love him and Glenn Ford in that. Mm-hmm. Rachel and the Stranger in 1948, The Man from Colorado in 1948, Streets of Laredo 1949 with William Bendix, and that's another one of my all-time favorites. And then Father is a Bachelor. It's kind of a farm thing, but it's still kind of a Western thing. And then Escape from Fort Bravo, 1953. The Horse Soldiers in 1959. Alvarez Kelly in 1966. The Wild Bunch in 1969. No one ever heard of that one. And Wild Rovers in 1971, which I worked on And I got to spend a great deal of time with him, and that was just golden time. And then the Revengers, 1972, was his last Western. Now, getting back to history, April 18, 1906, a devastating 8.25 magnitude earthquake and subsequent fires destroyed between 75 and 80% of San Francisco, killing between 3 and 4,000 people. It's a shame they rebuilt. That's all I can say. They should have left. They should have just moved on. Now, April 19, 1775, the Battle of Lexington and Concord. Now, this was the first major military action between the British Army and the American Patriot militias, and it marks the start of the American Revolutionary War. And from that time on, you better not mess with America because we'll kick your butts. Now, April 20th, 1657. This one's for New Yorkers and for Todd. Freedom of religion granted to Jews at New Amsterdam, allowing them to build a synagogue and worship openly, and it marks the beginning of a Jewish presence in New York.
Okay.
Hey, Mazel Tov. April 21st, 1836, the Battle of San Jacinto, final engagement of Texas Revolution between the Texicans and the Mexican government. Approximately 630 Mexican soldiers are killed, 730 are captured, 9 Texans were killed, and 30 were wounded. And I think most of those Texans that got killed were probably doing celebration and stepped on a landmine. I'm going to finish this up. And Cindy's going, thank God. April 22nd, 1839, Oklahoma land rush of 1889 was first land rush into the undesignated lands of the federal Indian Territory. It started at 12 noon, and an estimated 5,000 people participated in the rush, hoping to gain a part of the 50 million acres that had just been stolen from the American Indians by the American government, who never break a promise. And that's it. By golly.
Well, you know, you forgot one. I think it was the 15th or the 16th of April, was the anniversary of, as they call it, the Battle of Picacho Peak.
Oh God!
You know, now I'm going to set y'all straight here. There was no such thing as a battle there.
No, it wasn't.
It was, if you can manage a skirmish.
I call it a chase.
Yeah, okay, I'll give it that too. But I'll recognize a skirmish, and these people on Facebook are promoting this thing like it's the westernmost battle of the Civil War.
5,000 people up there this year.
You know, here's the deal. The Compendium of the Civil War, which is the official document, all 22 or 25 volumes of it, lists one page about...
probably a paragraph.
...what happened at Picacho Pass. One page. And that was in a correspondence. Mm-hmm. So there was no battle, people. It was a skirmish. And, yeah, it might have been the farthest skirmish in the Civil War, far westernmost or whatever, but it certainly was not a battle.
I'm going to give you a blow-by-blow description of that. A column, not even a column, but a bunch of Confederate soldiers are riding up the road. Coming from the west, from California, is another bunch of soldiers, very unorganized, very disorganized, but they were Union soldiers. They saw each other.
Yep.
The Confederates went, holy shit, we're going back to New Mexico.
Yep.
They turned around and took tail, and they chased him, and it was like a Hoppin' Along Cassidy movie with the Bar 20 boys chasing the bad guys.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's the name of that.
It was kind of like that time, Harry, that you and I were up in where were we? In Santa Paula or San Luis Obispo, and they chased us out of that bar.
Oh, yeah.
You kept telling those horrible jokes.
I know.
And I kept saying to you, I know they're funny,
but
I'm laughing.
But nobody
else
was. Did you
see anyone else laughing? No one was laughing.
Yeah, they're fun times.
Except for that old drunk in the corner who kept bugging his eyes out every time. Jeez. Some of the adventures with Harry, I could write a book about that, and we could do that show.
There you go.
Travels with Harry.
I had a drunk
come out of Big Nose Kate's one time and tell me I was getting prettier than Dad.
Well,
Cindy Mitchum Asbill, welcome to Voices of the West again.
Cindy Mitchum, I hope he tipped the bartender well.
Oh, my God. Woman, it's always a happy...
I listened to the... I said, with or without his teeth in.
It's always a happy time to have you on
this program. Young lady, you're a pretty sad here. I didn't know you had four eyes, but my God, you're pretty.
All right, let's get to the bottom of this, and that would be the book, The Ornery Mitchum Boys.
Start at the bottom and go down, huh?
Go down, yeah. So the book had been out of print. It's now coming back, and this is what the push is all about. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The world could use a little Mitchum right now.
There you go.
They use a lot of Mitchum.
No kidding.
Especially your dad.
Yeah. Yeah, he was one tough hombre. You don't see him a whole lot, but you know, when you do see him, his name in the credits.
I beg to differ.
Yeah,
Dad did 800 TV episodes and 60 feature films.
I stand sit corrected then.
I can't count.
I just watched them the other night. Well, I was just watching them the other morning because I only watch old Western TV shows with my coffee in the morning, and I turned it on, and there is her dad he's in a dance hall saloon, and there's this girl singing.
Of course.
And he's hooting and hollering. My God, you'd think it was me. in an environment I shouldn't be in.
Well, you know,
it's kind of fun on Facebook. People will constantly message me. I just saw your dad in Wells Fargo. I just saw him in The Virginian. I just saw him in Bewitched. He was everywhere.
And you know, the thing is, we never talk about it. But your dad, I can remember him in a ton of the old black and white noir detective things. He did a ton of those.
Yeah,
and he was good.
Like I said, he did. He did over 800 different TV episodes because he'd take his teeth out. But, you know, Uncle Bob was the leading man, the sexy one, and Uncle Bob was, and Dad was the one who was working all the time.
Yeah, he was the common man.
He was a utility player.
Bunker, you must have knocked your microphone there.
He was a mule. He was a workhorse.
Yeah, you got to.
Mike McGreevy told me that, especially in the 60s, there were two different casting stables. And everybody was trying to get into one or the other. And Mike laughed and said, your dad was in both of them. Because dad had a photographic memory like Uncle Bob. They knew that if they gave him a script and told him what time to be there, he'd be there early. So numerous times growing up, he'd get a call from his agent and say, a messenger's bringing you a script. You've got a 6 o'clock call.
Wow.
So, you know, he was the one that, the go-to guy.
Mm-hmm. The early days, that was, you know, casting directors, they didn't really care if you could act. They cared that you could show up on time and you knew the lines.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, and you didn't cause problems.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
That was for after work.
But one of my favorite screenshots is a picture of Dad with Hoagy Carmichael. Dad didn't have his teeth in. It's the most ridiculous face that Dad was making, but it's terrific.
Now, you know, the funny thing, early on, he was almost too good looking.
Yeah. Well, neither one of them ever desired to be actors.
Yeah.
It wasn't like they... That's part of what the book is about. Somebody... Actually, it was Stefan Arngrim who said, it's a love story between the two brothers.
Yeah.
And it's not your typical Hollywood kiss and tell by any means. Dad was very adamant that there was no need to write anything that would hurt anybody.
Right.
There's enough of that in the world.
Well, you know,
but it's also, being about the Mitchums, it's not your dry, on September the 7th, I was walking down the street kind of story either. You know?
Well, you know, I always got the feeling these were two guys that they'd rather go out and hop on a freight and go somewhere.
They wanted to be hobos.
Well, it wasn't that they'd rather. It was you know, Uncle Bob would say he was a victim of circumstance. my biological grandfather was actually killed while my grandmother was pregnant with Dad. Oh. So Dad never got to meet him. Mm-hmm. But in 1919, there was this little Norwegian immigrant with two children and one on the way. Not a very good circumstance. Mm-hmm. So she went back to Bridgeport, which is where Dad was born, at her parents' house. My great-grandfather was a Norwegian sea captain. Hmm. And he literally had a farm in Delaware and a house in Bridgeport. And my poor grandmother was trying to deal with those two, and she couldn't handle them, so she sent them off to the farm with her sister and brother-in-law in Delaware, and she took care of my Aunt Julie for a while, who was the oldest of the three siblings. And at 12, Aunt Julie joined a vaudeville dance team, and my grandmother gave her her blessings, and she went tap dancing across the country. And at 15, she married a sailor who got stationed in Long Beach. And when the Depression hit, and they literally lost the farm, my grandmother had remarried and had a brand new baby. And so my grandmother and her new husband and my Aunt Carol loaded up the car like the Beverly Hillbillies, and they took off to Long Beach. And there wasn't any room in the car for Dad and Bob. Dad was 14 and Bob was 16, so my grandmother gave them each a clean pair of socks and a handkerchief and said, "We'll see you in California from Bridgeport, Connecticut." So that's how they got to California, by, you know, necessity.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, thank God for railroads back then.
Yeah, try doing that on an airplane.
Yeah, well, we just drove to Oklahoma City, and it really struck me going through Arizona and New Mexico. We were parallel with the train tracks, and I thought, almost 100 years ago, Dad was hoboing on those same tracks.
Yep.
You were seeing pretty much the same country he saw.
Yeah. Except for the built-up portion.
It hasn't changed that much. Yeah, well, towns, but yeah.
His iconic poem that John Wayne recorded, "America, Why I Love Her,"
was
written from his memories. Mm. But all of that was from the memories of hoboing. Have you seen the Kansas sunset or Arizona rain? Yep. That's all from riding the rails when he was 14 and 15. He went back and forth four times before he was 16.
Damn.
You'll be happy to know I got a copy of the "America, Why I Love Her," and not because of John Wayne, who I love, but because of your dad. And I donated it.
Well,
thank
you.
And it's in the library down at the Empire Ranch in the Heritage Library.
Oh, you're going to make me cry. Thank you.
Oh, good. You made my day.
I'm, you know, when Dad died, Ernest Borgnine and A.C. Lyles, who, for those who don't know, A.C. was the oldest producer at Paramount Pictures, they took me aside and they said, "What are you going to do to honor your dad?" And they kind of website, and they both shook their heads no, and they said, "The country deserves, no, it needs to hear your father's poetry."
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So Ernie came up with the idea, and he said, "I'll tell you what you're going to do, kid. You're going to have your dad's friends each pick their favorite poem and record it, and I'll be the first one to do it."
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So Ernie picked "An American Boy Grows Up" off the Wayne album. And then Jim Jury decided that he wasn't going to let Ernie upstage him. So he went to the University of Houston and recorded two of Dad's poems and had music put to them. And then our beloved Dean Smith, Dad wrote a poem for the Stuntmen. Mm-hmm. So Dean took that poem and had a video photographer come out to his Longhorn Ranch and videotape him while he was on his trick horse reciting the poem about stuntmen. Wow. And it just kept snowballing. There's 53 tracks on the CD.
Yep.
Of all these amazing people, including Robert Duvall, who picked "America, Why I Love Her." Jane Russell's on it.
Yep.
And L.Q. Jones is on it.
It's a beautiful
CD. Grimley's on it.
It's a beautiful CD.
Jim Gammon.
You know, we should play some tracks from that from time to time.
I think I have it someplace.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure where, but I believe I have it.
The book is awesome.
Well, if you don't, I'll send you another copy.
Well, I'll find it, but yeah. I appreciate it. Or when you come back to Arizona next time, whatever. Hey, we need to do our first commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Cindy Mitchum Asbill is our guest. We're talking about them ornery Mitchum boys, Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, and Todd Roberts. We'll be back with much more right after this important messages. These important messages. Stay tuned.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the hacienda. That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club is one of the best-kept economic secrets in town. This 900-member group maintains one of the finest shotgun shooting ranges in the country, featuring trap, skeet, five-stand, and sporting clays fields, and hosts national and international events that bring thousands of people and millions of dollars into our community. The Spring Satellite Grand American Tournament alone involves 1,200 participants for 10 days. Learn more about this and their other contributions to our community at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com.
Yes, sir. It's sure been some excitement.
Always on the prowl, dodging the law. And what for?
We ain't done nothing but good. Fighting bandits, rustlers, and outlaws, and helping the helpers.
There's been a lot of dirty tricks blamed on us, Grizzly, that we never did.
Do you realize, son, that with all our shooting, we ain't never killed anybody?
This is the Voices of the West.
On Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, and Todd Roberts with you. Cindy Mitchum Asbill is our guest, and you're listening to the tunes here of Bill Boyd and his Cowboy Ramblers.
You know, the only reason you can never hit anybody is because you just can't shoot. You need glasses.
Anyway, we are back, and what are we doing? Well, we're talking with Cindy about the book. That's what
yeah,
it is.
We are.
You know, a moment, senior moment there. Sorry.
We're past senior moments.
Yeah, we're not even sure what to call them now. Yeah. Todd, get in there.
Yeah, earn your money.
So, you know, Cindy, I could just do a whole show by myself in my head about your dad and your uncle.
Well, do it then.
Well, you know, listen, Bunker, I can't allow you into my head because the last time you got in there, you polluted it so badly, I started to become a drunk.
The day I met you, I said the first thing I said about you, that guy with the red nose, he's a drunk.
Well, that's why I bring zinc oxide everywhere I go. Between Blood on the Moon and, you know, the iconic characters that your father and your uncle created, the Dirty Harry stuff and all the television work he did, you know, it's truly remarkable. But You know, there's one thing that my dad and I used to talk about all the time, and why he was so, shall I say, had such a dim view of so many modern actors is we talk about a film and he'd say, Todd, do you believe that guy? We'd be on television, whatever it was, a film or a TV show. You believe it? And the character would have a gun in his hand. He said, you believe that guy? Mm-hmm. And I'd say, well, you know, Todd, stop. You don't believe him. He's pointing a gun at you. You don't believe him. You don't believe he could shoot you. Look how he holds the gun. Look at it, how nervous he is. Look at this. Look at that. Your dad and your uncle both had that ability to convey that realism of what it was to consider to take somebody's life and to take somebody's life. And whether they were well-trained with firearms or they weren't, you believe they were. And I think that's a talent that they both had in spades, and we don't see it anymore, really. Once in a while we do, but rarely. It used to be
the norm. I think it's life experience.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's life experience. To my knowledge, neither one of them ever shot anybody, but they sure should punch people.
Well, that's a half a step on the way there.
Yeah. Well, they were both professional boxers. Dad, especially in the Army. And but that's why the title of the book is Them Henri Mitchum Boys. Being bounced back and forth between Bridgeport, Connecticut and Delaware, with the dialect difference, they were bullied. And not having a father, they were bullied. So Dad was, as he said, a windmill fighter. Uncle Bob was a dirty fighter.
Yeah.
And they, one of their first fights when they were young in Delaware, Uncle Bob took a hole punch and hit a kid on the head with it, and Dad chewed the other kid's armpit, and they both ended up in the hospital.
Wow!
So they nicknamed the Henri Mitchum Boys, and it just kept growing from there, everything that they did. They were protective. And that's another question I always get is, was Dad jealous of Uncle Bob? And I would say absolutely not. They adored one another, mm-hmm. as you both have seen, but they were also fiercely protective of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And Dad would say that Bob was a prisoner of his fame, where Dad, if somebody would look at Dad and say, don't I know you? And he'd go off on a Mitchum tangent and say, I'm your wife's butcher. And they'd believe him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But they were the Henri Mitchum Boys because they fought so much to survive. And it's the reason that they were so good at dialect is because from that early experience, they learned traveling and hoboing. You know, Uncle Bob got picked up for vagrancy in Georgia,
mm-hmm.
Because he didn't have the accent. And he was put on a chain gang at 14, 15. So they learned if they could pick up the dialect instantly, they wouldn't be charged with vagrancy.
Fit in.
And all of that carried forth into their acting abilities.
Yeah, wow. You know, that's that whole thing of fitting in. That's how you survive. The chameleon.
Yeah, they had to.
I can't think of any actors or actresses today who have ever gone through experiences like that. I mean, I don't know everybody's history or biography.
Most of them, their most harrowing experience in their life is going down to Spring Break in Florida.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, these two led the American dream without even realizing it. Mm-hmm.
They were the American dream.
As I said, they had no intention on being actors at all. Dad was the wide... When they got to Long Beach, they discovered the beach and girls and were just like, I'm not leaving this place. And Aunt Julie belonged to the Long Beach Players Guild, and she told Uncle Bob that he needed to join. And he said, why do I want to do that?
Girls.
And she finally convinced him. She said, there's 30 women and only one man. You'll get lucky every night. So he joined.
James Blind. That my theater arts teacher used on me. And I had my heart set on going into stage crew. And he was like, okay, Todd, let me explain something to you. I know you think that you're going to get into stage crew and you're going to meet a lot of girls and how cool it is. You're going to meet a lot more girls in theater. And all of a sudden, I was like, yeah, but I want to hang out with my friends and steal your cigarettes and beer
right
out of the fridge.
Yeah.
And he was like, that's exactly why you're going to theater. And that's what I happened to them.
Yep.
So, yeah, so Bob did that, and that's where they discovered him for the first Hoppy movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is, and he's great in that Hoppy movie.
He is,
especially how he allows his character allows himself to be sucked in by Victor Jory.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so good. It shows you the dynamic prowess of Jory, but it also shows Bob as this sweet, like, almost gullible guy who wants to marry this girl and, you know, get a spread for himself and so on and so forth. It's very, you know, it shows the range of his acting. Really,
you know, Dad
was seriously walking down Santa Monica Boulevard and somebody stopped him and asked him if he was an actor, and he said no. And they said, do you want to be? And he said, how much does it pay? And that was his first job in 1947 in the Prairie.
Wow.
You know, there's an interesting story there about Bob when he did the first Western. And that goes back to, like we were saying, their ability to blend in and be a chameleon. But he was on the job, and he was studying the cowboys, really studying them. And he had the cowboys thinking he was a cowboy.
Yeah. Oh, no, they were such quick studies. It was unbelievable, both of them. Yeah, and they never forgot anything. Dad wanted to do a Shakespeare play years later, like in the late 80s up in Nevada City at the oldest continuously running theater in California, the Nevada Theater.
Yeah.
And I said, Dad, what are you going to use for your audition? And he immediately went into this huge soliloquy, and I said, when did you learn that? And he said, 1932. I said, Dad, that's not fair.
Yo, you wonder.
And he said, why not? And I said, everybody else is scrambling to get some notes and to learn something, and you just pull something out of your hat. And he said, I had to learn it once.
Yeah, well, you know, it's that kind of plain talk that gets you going. Hey, we got to do our next commercial break here. I hate interrupting it, but, you know.
We got to
pay the bills, man, you know. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, and Todd Roberts with you. On Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, our guest Cindy Mitchum Asbill. And we'll be back with her after this.
Can you even imagine switching back to pen and paper to run your business? Every year, we become more and more dependent upon our technology. If your network is not set up properly, you're just one click or one email away from losing data critical to your operation. Arizona Computer Guru offers a host of services to prevent and protect you from disaster. From online backup services to email filtering to fully managed network services, Arizona Computer Guru is here to keep your network secure, your data safe, and your budget in the black. To schedule your free consultation, call 304-8300.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club dates from 1948 and is now at 7800 West Ol Ajo Highway. The club owns 80 acres and leases 300 more from Pima County that supports 50 trap fields, 15 skeet fields, 2 5-stand fields, 2 sporting plays courses with 12 stations each, a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, 200 full-service RV hookups for members, and free Wi-Fi. This expansive facility gives enough room to host major national and international events annually, bringing thousands of people to the community. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSki.com.
Well, I'm Hank Fergus, Marshal.
So?
You never heard of me?
Nope.
Well, I've been in California for quite a spell.
Well, this is Dodge, Fergus. And gunmen with big reputations come and go a lot here. Mostly they go.
This is the Voices of the West.
Back on Nemo Franzi's Voices of the West, Harry Alexander, Bunker DeFrance, Todd Roberts, our guest Cindy Mitchum Asbill, and you know, that's, I got to tell you, that theme song there to the High Chaparral's got to be one of the best theme songs.
I think it's the best TV scene.
Well, I, you know, yeah, and there's always on Facebook, there's always these people who, what's the best? What's the best TV theme song?
I saw one of those things. They went through,
yeah, I know,
50 yards of stuff before anybody mentioned the High Chaparral. I was pissed.
You know, and rightly so. Cindy, what else is happening in that book that we may have forgotten about?
Well, I recently, our son-in-law was watching the director's cut on the Criterion Collection of Dead Man.
Mm-hmm.
And he called us up and he said, you're not going to believe this, but Jim Jarmusch, in his director's cut, started talking about the book.
Oh, wow.
And just a short version of what he said is, anyone that's a Robert Mitchum fan, man, you got to find this book by Mitchum's brother John.
Mm-hmm.
A hilarious book about their lives together, which is quite a recommendation coming from Mr. Jarmusch,
yeah,
I think.
For sure.
Put that on the front cover.
It's 415 pages and a lot of amazing photographs, a lot of family photos and a lot of stills and pictures of different people that you've all met, like Hal Baylor and Lenny Gear and people like that there. Mm-hmm. And it's the true inner workings of these two, how they got along, how they took care of one another, and some of the inside stories. It naturally touches on the pot bust, which is not what those two are all about,
mm-hmm.
but the things that they did accomplish and the people, the amazing people that they met throughout their lives.
You know,
and the people who had heavy influences on them.
Yeah, I remember hearing about and reading about the pot bust, and I'm thinking, yeah, and so?
You know, I got to do
it. Was a setup. It was a total setup.
Of course it was.
There's never, ever denying Uncle Bob smoked pot. That's not...
And who cares?
But, well, 1940, the truth to that story, Henry Anslinger handpicked Uncle Bob to be the poster boy for the evils of marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
That's who cared.
Yeah.
And
it was a total setup on that end, and I'm extremely proud of Uncle Bob. Howard Hughes wanted to sweep it under the carpet, mm-hmm. and cover it up and just pay the fines, because in reality he had 5 films already in the can that were done. He had a huge financial stake if Uncle Bob's reputation died, but Uncle Bob refused to do it.
Well, you know,
he said, no, I don't see, yeah, I didn't do anything wrong, and I'm not gonna be the fall guy for this.
Yeah.
So it turned out in his favor that he became the you know, Mr. Cool.
Mr. Bad Boy.
Or whatever you wanted to.
Yeah.
Yeah, the bad boy from it. But he refused to buckle under because of it.
You know, I had
in today's world, it wouldn't even get, you know, in the newspaper.
No.
But they really tried to destroy his career using him as the evils of marijuana.
That's that whole newspaper mentality of, you know, build somebody up so you can tear them down, because it's more fun tearing them down than building them up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like I said, it was Anslinger in his anti-drug campaign that was trying to do it.
Well, that's that kind of left thing that we're still fighting today.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that was 1948. Things were a lot different then.
Yeah.
you know.
You know, I had the great pleasure of working with Bob two movies in a row, Good Guys and the Bad Guys, and Young Billy Young before that. But one of the things that really impressed me about him, is he loved to tell stories. And, you know, we'd break for lunch, and everybody would eat real fast, and then gather around him, and he'd tell his stories. John Carradine came up on the set playing the conductor, and your dad was like the rest of us. He sat there with his mouth open, like, just like us, listening to John Carradine tell his stories.
Yeah,
that was so neat.
You know, Carradine and Dad did, that is a horrible film, but now it's a cult classic, that my cousin Chris was involved in, called Bigfoot.
Hmm.
And it was the only film that Dad ever... We had to leave the theater before the lights came on because he didn't want anybody to recognize him. But Dad and Carradine were the two mainstays. You know, they made that picture, and now it's a cult classic. Dad would just be so appalled.
Not but, in the lupus.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Todd, get in there,
but
buddy.
No, that's another thing about this book is people were saying that because of their childhood and the adventures that they had and the people that they met and the experiences that they had, that it all wove together to how creative they were and what set them apart from everybody else, and that they both became exceptional storytellers because of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, your dad, what? His poetry is, it should, that's just my opinion, but it should be in the schools. And the kids should be made to read.
Well,
so
I'm working, actually,
memorize it.
An event is being held at the Aqua Caliente Casino and Resort on September 11th. And to make, because it's been my dream, my promise to Dad, we don't have a national poem. We have all kinds of other things, a national fungus and a national rock, but we don't have a national poem.
Yeah.
So I am determined to give the country America Why I Love Her as our national poem.
Oh. That's a great idea.
If we can help in any way, let us know.
Well, and
that idea.
Cindy, I saw that...
Well, that's my...
I saw...
The poem is, not only did John Wayne record it, and Robert Duvall recorded it, but it's been used in lieu of prayer to open up Congress.
Yep.
There are fireworks displays that have been created around the poem. It is in college textbooks. The military uses it. It's in the Boy Scouts handbook.
Ooh.
It is our de facto national poem, but it's
Americana.
Time for it to become official, especially on the 250th anniversary of our country.
I saw a post, I think it was on Facebook. No, it was not on Facebook. It was some place. You're a member of a group called the Trumpets. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Pardon me.
Yes.
You play the trumpet?
No. They're followers of President Trump.
Oh, he doesn't play the trumpet. Yeah.
And so, yeah. I think he would be the guy who would make it so.
The organization that's actually hosting this gala in Palm Springs is the largest women's Republican patriot club in the country. There's over 1,800 women in the club, and they are determined to help me get it done.
And one male.
It's actually about 400.
Are the males trumpets too?
No.
I don't know if they're trumpets or not, but you know, I just want to get this done. So they're holding this gala for me, for Dad, on September 11th, and it's about America Why I Love Her, which is, as you all know, it's a non-political poem. It's about the beauty of our country.
That's exactly what it is, and that's why the left isn't going to want to do it or have anything to do with it.
Not only that, but the fact that it's very patriotic.
Well, yeah, there you go. Yeah, I like this here that it says here, your parents were staunch Republicans, with my father working as the opening act for Barry Goldwater's Stump Trail.
God bless him.
You know, Barry Goldwater.
Yeah, with Jim Drury.
Great patriot. He was my he was my first interview when I was in the journalism field. And interviewed him for my high school newspaper. My God. And we got to know one another. And, yeah, well, there you go.
Well, I read his biography.
Yes, and no,
I
became a Republican. Dad and that Jim Jury and John Locke. For.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Dad and that combination on the road.
Oh, man. Todd, what do you got?
Yeah,
so, Cindy, you know, I ask this question when the guest has the goods, and you qualify, despite what Bunker says, but that's okay. We don't have to talk about that right now, because the show's too short. You know, we think we know John Mitchum, and we think we know Bob Mitchum, but what is it that we don't know? What story did you find out in your journey of the book, or just growing up in life, that you heard about your uncle and your dad? They could be together or separate. That you were like, "What? Wait a minute! Hold on a second. Tell me the story again." And put down the drink. What is that?
Oh, Lord.
Too many.
Well, my particular story with Uncle Bob was my parents were pretty protective of me. And growing up in the 60s, Dad was everywhere, as we already discussed. But they didn't really let me go to the theater to see a lot of Uncle Bob. And I knew Uncle Bob was a movie star, but I didn't understand why when Dad was on TV almost every night, people always asked me about Uncle Bob. And I didn't see Cape Fear until after I was married. And I watched it, and I called him up, and I said, "You are a creep." And he said, "What did I do?" I said, "You just scared the daylights out of me." And he said, "I was just doing my job." And I said, "Well, I'm glad my parents did their job, because I never would have hugged you or kissed you or sat on your lap if I'd seen that as a child. I didn't know my uncle was that nasty."
Oh, my God. That's funny.
So what was your reaction when you saw him in Night of the Hunter?
Night of the Hunter. Oh, my God. Night of the Hunter. I took notice Night of the Hunter. Night of the Hunter, and she said to me, she said, Where is this in your mind that this? Where did you store these things?" And I said, "Well, it scared the devil out of me, and I thought you should be right alongside me."
Well, I can say that my parents went to go and have lunch with Bob on set, and my mother couldn't even eat looking at the love and hate on his hands. She couldn't even look at him, knowing full well he was in costume, but she couldn't even handle looking at him. But oddly enough, Night of the Hunter didn't scare me as much as Cape Fear. But I've become very dear friends with Kathy Garver, who was one of the orphans in Night of the Hunter, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So she went from Night of the Hunter to Sissy on Family Affair, which I think is very amusing.
Yes.
Very
as
big
far
change.
As my father, Dad was an open book. There wasn't much I asked him one time, because my mother died very young. My mother was only 46 when she passed away, and my mother was the love of his life. And I said, "Dad, I have to ask you something." And he said, "What's that?" And I said, "You can write a poem about you can write a poem about Herb Jeffries. You can write a poem for Ken Curtis about the mule named Ruth. But there's two poems that are glaringly missing." And he just gave me a sideways glance, and he said, "It's nobody's goddamn business how I feel about your mother or my brother."
Wow. Nice. Good response.
So he was very, very protective of the two of them.
Yeah.
You know, what was
that was very personal to him, and he didn't he didn't want to share anything about those two people.
What were some of his favorite things that would kind of make us sit up and pay attention and maybe even go, hey, I want to know more about that?
Oh.
You know, like hobbies and things like that. Songs, music, books. His, you know, a few of his favorite things.
He loved history. He was an accomplished musician. He studied opera. But he loved history, which is why he did that album with Dan Blocker called Our Land, Our Heritage. Uh-huh. Dad researched all of the history as to why those folk songs were written, what was going on, and why they stayed and other songs disappeared. So he did he wrote the narration for Dan. Dan couldn't sing and he didn't have any rhythm. Dad sang the songs with the Ken Darby Choir, and it's on RCA. It's a fabulous, fabulous
album.
I've
heard it, yeah.
And from that, he did a whole project called Songs of History, based on the same premise of why did these songs. And he left me 28 scripts and treatments.
Wow.
Of various songs, ranging from the boll weevil that Barry Corbin has agreed to do for me,
mm-hmm.
and Streets of Laredo that Buck Taylor wants to do, to being the history of San Jacinto battle happening today. Bruce Boxleitner and R.W. Hampton want to do Will You Come to the Bower, which is what the fife player played when they attacked Santa Ana at the Battle of San Jacinto on this day.
Huh.
So I've got 28 of these scripts and treatments and stories that we are putting together. I'm working with Joe Cornett, my director, and we are putting together this whole project. Because the schools don't teach history or geography or music.
Nope.
Or social studies.
Nope.
And this whole project encompasses all of that. And when Dad first wrote it, naturally it was going to be on film, and it was reel-to-reel, and it was going to be very expensive. But now we can stream it and do it digitally.
Sure.
And do it in 30-minute increments and have it on. We've already been asked to submit it to INSB and stations like that so that it can be out there for people and children, especially, to get a taste of what America really was and how it came about.
Is the boll weevil song in there?
That's one project. It is, and that's what when I saw Barry last week, he said, do I get to sing the song, too?
The Tex Ritter's version of that, I'd die for it.
So I told Barry, if you want to sing it, you can sing it, Barry. But so it's going to be a blast, and it's going to be like, you know, capturing all these people while we can, and then moving forward. And we're also developing Dad's book into a limited series because it can't be a feature film.
Yeah.
It would only be one story out of 400 pages, and it would probably want to be about the stupid pot bust, which I refuse to do. Like I said, there's so many fascinating people that these guys encountered in their lives. Mm. My cousin Bentley, Chris's oldest son, looked at me one day and he said, Cindy, why does weird shit always happen to a Mitchum? And he's totally right, you know? It's like just walking down the street, weird stuff happens.
There you go. And weird stuff is happening here. We got to do our last commercial break right now here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, Todd Roberts with you. Cindy Mitchum Asbill is our guest. We're talking about the Mitchum boys. We'll be right back.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the Hacienda. That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
Hello, I'm Mr. Red.
No doubt you've heard about rescue groups for dogs and cats, but did you know there's a rescue group for horses? That's right, it's called Horse It Around Rescue. Founders Steve Boyce and Teresa Worrell are helping out all those equine victims of neglect and cruelty by giving them a place to restore their health and wellness. And Horse It Around provides a nurturing and natural environment where horses can be horses, so they can be adopted out into forever homes. More than 120 horses, mules, and donkeys have been adopted out, but like everything else, it costs money to run the project. Horse It Around is a 501c3 nonprofit located in Southeast Arizona. Your tax-deductible donations to Horse It Around will go a long way so those horses can be horses. Check out the website, horseitaroundrescue.org. Make a difference in a horse's life. That's horseitaroundrescue.org.
Besides bringing millions a year into this community with national and international events, the Tucson Trap and Skeet Club at 7800 West Old Ajo Highway services the local shooting sports community with a 380-acre site featuring trap, skeet, five stand, and two sporting clays fields, as well as a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, which all is available to local shooters, and soon, an archery range. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com or take a drive out west of town and see it for yourself. New members or single-day use, welcome.
What are you going to do, Badger? This fakest kid ain't no cream puff, you know.
He's a plenty tough customer.
So am I. There ain't no guy can make me take off my hat, say sir, and get by with it.
This is the Voices of the West.
Great stuff they had back then, man. I tell
that's
you what.
Where that sounds like an accordion to me.
Yeah, it's the name of the tune is Saltwater. Where is it here? Come back here. Saltwater Cowboy, Dude Martin, and his Roundup Gang.
Hey, there was a saltwater cowboy.
With the old rule for his reins, just a saltwater cowboy in the early riveless train.
I love this stuff, man. Old Western music.
Yeah, man.
Good stuff. Welcome back, Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, Todd Robertson, Emil Franzese, Voices of the West, Cindy Mitchum Asbell is our guest, and you know we're almost out of time here.
Well, we got to ask her the question,
Todd. You're the question master.
The question. All right. Thank God it's an adult woman who can handle the question.
No, I don't know about that.
All right, Cindy.
I'm ready.
I hope you have your drink in your hand because you're going to need to drink it after I ask the question.
I got mine.
Your favorite film or television show, Western. Your favorite Western or film television show.
And it can be one of your dads.
Oh, Lordy.
Yeah.
I told you, you better have a drink.
Well, as a little girl, it was The Rifleman because of Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but okay.
That works.
Yeah. That works.
And as a big girl?
Yeah. Johnny actually gave me a copy of his 45, Cindy's birthday, and signed it for me.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah. So that as a little girl, it was, you know, every little girl in the country loved Johnny.
We lost a great Western swing band when we lost him.
Mm-hmm. And his the band that he did with all of his father's arrangements or grandfather's arrangements was fantastic.
Well, we didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Me.
Yes, we did. That's why we do it.
Well, you're allowed to cheat, Cindy. You're allowed to use one of your dad or your uncle's films.
Yeah,
We're not going to hold it against you. No. And you're in pretty good company.
Surprised me.
Okay.
You should know better with us.
That one surprised me. Outlaw Jersey Wales with Dad in that big buffalo robe.
Oh, yeah.
Was kind of...
I bet he wished he could have kept it.
That was the nastiest role ever.
Did he ever keep wardrobe?
No. The only thing he ever kept was his guitar from Riverboat.
Wow.
Mm. Wow.
Well, all right. We're out. Pardon me. We are out of time. But next time you get to Arizona, Cindy, we're going to grill you some more.
Yes, we are.
We're going to
grill you, we're
going to
barbecue you, we're
going to
fry you.
I will say very quickly, I want to give a huge thank you to Henry Gray Publishing for taking on the daunting task of redoing this book. It's been on eBay for up to $7,000, which
Louise.
Is ridiculous.
Wow.
But now, thanks to Henry Gray Publishing, the reprinted edition is $29.95 or $39.95 for a hardcover on Amazon and on Walmart and all those good places.
That's a gongo.
So we wanted to make it so anybody can get the book.
All right. That's a gongo.
And we'll put a link. We'll put a link in there to the Amazon stuff, and that way people can go buy after they listen to the podcast.
Well, and I want to thank you guys very much for having me on. It's been an absolute blast.
Oh, it is.
I hope you come see me in Tombstone.
We will.
More fun than a sack full of squirrels.
Yeah, it is our pleasure. our pleasure, Miss Cindy. God, love to see you, and looking forward to it in July.
All right. And bring Sally.
Yeah, I'll bring Sally. And you know, Sally's actually listening to the program.
Yeah, Sally, say hi.
See, hi, Sally. I love you and miss you.
I told her in the email today that you were going to be on, and she said, "Oh boy."
We'll get an email tomorrow.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Anyway. We'll go to Big Nose Kate's together.
All right, there you go. Now we're talking. All right, that's it for this edition of Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Cindy Mitchum Asbel, thank you so much for joining us.
78.
Yeah, right, something like that.
78, 79, 80 O's, you ornery Mitchum boys, and you just keep on being ornery.
All right, so long, folks.
Thanks for listening to Emil Franzi's Voices of the West.